Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Build It Better. My name is Tracy. You can follow me on Twitter at Lady Elite, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ben Lesh.
Ben Lesh. See, she did it. Like, yeah, all right. So sometimes she doesn't, she'll be like, bye, and she'll just wait for me to say
something.
And then
something. He has this awkward pause. It's
the best. And then other times she'll like do what she just did to me there.
This is the first time I've done it, Colin, so I'm pretty excited, but now it's just going to piss Ben off even more, and he's going to be more awkward every single time we start this podcast. So
I feel like I'm going to have to tune into every episode.
Today we have a very special guest, Colin. You're working at, is it called Platformatic?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, just started working at Platformatic with Mateo and Kalina, who, if y'all don't know, both Colin and Mateo are both on the No Technical Steering Committee. Colin also worked at Dino for a little bit and was helping them do Node Compat. So, been around the block?
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't the first job. I had other ones before
that. I know, of course. But the two ones that we're most excited about. Unless there's another one that you think we should be even more excited about.
Yeah. I was a cashier at Kmart for a while. We could talk about that today if you want.
I started my work experience at McDonald's, so there's that.
Nice. Nice. My best friend worked at McDonald's. They got like free, like, because they throw the hamburgers out after an hour or something like that. So
do they really though?
Yeah, his restaurant.
Did you, Colin?
Yeah, so that granted, this was like 20 years ago, so I don't know if times have changed.
Right.
But, you would cook the meat or whatever on a grill, and then you'd put it into this like warming station, and it had like a little countdown on it. And once it expired, you were supposed to pitch it.
But did you ever like not pitch it?
I think I did a good job of following the rules. Eating the breakfast one time when we would throw that away. Because, you know, McDonald's breakfast was so good and they would just waste.
Did you like just save all the hash browns? That's what I would do. I'd be like, let me make a stack of like five hash browns and just take a big bite.
No, I got caught eating the breakfast, so I lost my employee meal for the day.
Oh, that's so lame.
Stuff's so silly. Let's get punitive with people making minimum wage. It's so ridiculous. Like, just let them eat you're going to throw it away. Gosh.
My favorite thing at McDonald's is asking for fries, no salt, and them to make the chicken nuggets fresh. I'm that customer.
Yeah. The minimum wage thing, like, so I worked at Kmart for like $4 an hour, and there's this lady named Kathy that came in and was like doing the cool hand Luke thing where she told me like, move these bags. This is where the garden shop. Move these bags over here. And then I moved them over there. She came back and said, move them over there. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And she's like, you better do it or you're fired. And I was like, gosh, Kathy, I don't know where I'll find another $4 an hour job.
Oh my God.
You know, I'm an 18-year-old smart ass or 17 or however old I was. But yeah, anyway. So okay. Let's talk about the newer jobs. Those are probably more relevant.
Yes. Okay. So Colin gets to work on some fun stuff. And you were telling us about like some stuff that you worked on in V8 and.
Yeah, so this was a really tricky bug. I wouldn't say it was like the hardest bug. It was just one of those ones where you're like, there's no way this is a bug. And then, you know, as you dig, well, you're like,
oh. Sorry, just so we don't do this cold, I just want to specify that we were talking to Colin beforehand about like what's some crazy stuff that you've had to deal with. And that's the context here. So
now Colin's all stressed out because he's like, is this crazy enough?
Well, I mean, crazy. But, you know.
Yeah, so back in, I don't know, I guess the bug was from 2021. I was working at a company called Joyent, who, like, used to be the corporate stewards of Node, and then they got acquired by Samsung. So I was doing, like, a lot of work with Samsung building up a private cloud and whatnot. But one of the things that I was responsible for was kind of keeping Node and libuv, like, running on Smart OS, which is like, or at least at the time it was Joyent's kind of like Lumos OS that they were really big on. And so it's kind of a niche operating system. So like, you know, the people who use it love it, but it doesn't have like, you know, quite the huge user base like something like Linux. But yeah, so one of the things that I would do is, you know, when things like a V8 update would come into Node, sometimes it breaks on certain platforms. So a lot of times that's Windows, but sometimes it's some of the, you know, less popular ones that the V8 team itself doesn't really test on. And so we got this update, I believe it was to V8 8.8, and you know, we did the update, we were running the Node CI, and for some reason SmartOS was failing in Node's add-on tests, which if you're familiar with like compiled add-ons, it's basically being able to take C code and run it in your Node.js application. And it didn't make any sense at all because, you know, we weren't doing anything with C++ code or anything like that. This was just the V8 update. So I was like, yeah, it seems like it's probably a flake. Like, no way this is a bug. And then I started looking into it more and like looking through the logs of the tests that were running, we saw it was trying to find the path on the system where Python lived. And it was like, you know, Python executable found here. And then there was another line with just this like empty string below it. And I was like, well, that looks odd. So I compared it to like some of the other platforms where things were working, right? And on the other platforms, that was just a single line of output. So I was like, okay, this looks different. So let me like go in and start debugging. And so the output that I'm talking about was coming from a module called NodeJip, which is used like kind of behind the scenes to compile add-ons. Basically, right. Node is kind of like the only remaining user of this build system JIP. And so we're kind of stuck with it for a while now. But so I was like, okay, something going wrong in NodeJip with this V8 update. And so I found the code in NodeJip where it was logging what the Python Python path was. And so I started just, you know, adding some console logs in there to see what was going on. And I found out that those two lines that were supposed to be one was because, you know, something you never expect to happen, string.prototype.trim was not working. So it was supposed to be cutting off a new line off of the end of there. And then that's why you would only have one line. But since it wasn't doing that properly, it ended up being spread across two lines. So I was like, all right, so there is something going on in V8 here. So then I went into V8 and I'm trying to debug on my local Mac at first. And I was like, nothing looks off here. Luckily, I did have access to a SmartOS machine. So I logged into that and ran it and saw that what was happening was Trim was trying to look for certain character codes to like remove from the string.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I already see where this is going. Okay, go ahead. I want to hear the rest. Sorry.
So inside of V8 itself, they're using a function, a C++ built-in called stdod, which I believe takes a string and converts it into a decimal. And it was working sometimes, but not in this one case. And I couldn't figure out why. And then I realized that it was working on a hex string, so something that started with 0x. And you know, then I did some more digging, and found out that on SmartOS, that function, which is supposed to handle hex strings, doesn't handle hex strings. only on SmartOS, like major, like minor detail. And so I was able to then work around it by, you know, looking if something started, if the string started with 0x, like 0 and then lowercase or capital X. And if that was the case, you know, go down a different code path. And then I was, you know, I submitted that as a patch to the V8 project. And last time I checked, it was still in the code base. I don't know if it is or not anymore. But yeah, that was kind of the weird, like JavaScript just stopped working for me bug that I ran into.
Oh, right on. Like I thought for sure when you started talking, like, and you got to the part where it was like the line, like the return was not being trimmed off. I was like, this is going to be some weird CRLF thing. Like where there's like an additional character in this one operating system that like the code wasn't expecting or something. But I was waiting to hear that there was like one more way that line feeds could happen.
/m/r and /q.
Yeah, /WTF.
Exactly. I can imagine you being like really animated and coming home and be like, oh my God, I had this crazy day and this happened and this happened and this happened. And like whoever you're telling that's not a developer is just like, I don't know. This doesn't sound that crazy, but okay.
I was actually really excited when I figured it out because I don't do a lot of work inside of V8 itself. So I was like, oh, I get to, you know, send a patch to V8. That's something that gets used in way more systems than just Node.
Yeah, that's fun. That's really fun. And then you were talking about a memory problem too.
Yeah.
I'm curious to hear about.
So I've been in the process recently of writing a test runner for Node. But before that, I used the HappyJS test runner. It's a module called Lab. And I can't remember if someone noticed or if there was an actual bug reported or what, but we were seeing a lot of like really high memory usage when we would run the Happy test suite inside of Lab. And so we were concerned that there could be a memory leak in Happy itself. TLDR, it turned out that there was no memory leak there, so that was good. But so I was kind of diving in and seeing why we were seeing such, you know, high memory usage. And it turned out it was because Lab used something called domains. So I don't know how familiar you might be with domains as in terms of the core module inside of Node. Yeah. But it used to be a way that we could kind of group together IO operations. And then if any errors happened in any of those, we could bubble them up to like a single point. And it was used a lot by test runners for things like that, like, you know, making sure the tests weren't throwing errors all over the place. We've since kind of deprecated it and replaced it with a solution that's built on top of async hooks because it's very invasive. So like you would look at all of the like event emitters inside of your application and they would have basically a pointer back to whatever the current domain that they were working with was. So it was very invasive and, you know, not the most intuitive thing. But anyways, that's what we had at the time. And that's what Lab used to kind of control errors from, like I said, flying all over the place. The interesting thing was Node does a lot of lazy loading behind the scenes because it lets Node give the perception of like starting up and running a little faster if you wait to actually require and initialize certain resources when you're actually using them. And so what would happen inside of Lab is we would start attaching domains to all these things and then Node would lazy load them. And once the lazy loading would happen, they would all have these pointers back to the domains that Lab was using. And those pointers would never change. So basically we lazy loaded these things. They were pointing to domains and then they would never let go of the domain object again. so the kind of workaround that we took inside of Lab was to, you know, basically identify the couple objects that were holding on to a lot of memory and lazy load those before Lab started attaching its own things to the data structures. And so that way, whenever, you know, these things would be lazy loaded by core, they were already actually instantiated. And so they wouldn't then have these stray pointers all over the place. And we were able to take the memory usage of like the test running process and cut it by over half. So it was like a substantial memory savings.
That's a pretty cool one. I had a strange memory like this. I don't know. Just reminded me of, there was a time where I was debugging some like RxJS code at, I don't know if I was at Citadel or where I was. I was one of the companies I was working at it. There was this, like the memory would just go up and up and up. And there was some code that I didn't write in there that was seemed to be the cause of it. Like I had narrowed it down to this streaming data that was happening. And I'm like, okay, well, what's in memory? And I examined the memory and I'm like, wow, like every single like packet that we've gotten so far from this is just like building up in memory and never getting released. And I couldn't figure out why that was because the variable that it was landing in was definitely in a spot where it should be getting garbage collected. And I didn't understand like how this could be. And as it turns out, there was, I used to Google. Anyways, as it turns out, there was this, someone was using throw error in ArcGIS and the old throw error had people pass an error instance to it instead of having a function that instantiated an error. And I didn't know this about V8 until at the time. And so I'm looking at this and I'm like, this is so strange. And I, what did I do? I, I, I logged out the error stack at some point. And as soon as I logged out the error stack, the memory went down a little bit. And I was like, wait, what? Like, how is this a thing? And that was the day that I learned that wherever you instantiate an error, it traps everything in scope, like everything in memory and scope, so you can debug it later, including information about the stack. And it doesn't release it until you examine the stack property on the error. And so as long as you keep that error around, you're keeping everything in memory around that was in scope when you instantiated the error. And it's generally not a problem because people just throw new error and it's done, like it's gone after that. But if you create an error and just keep it around, it's like this memory trap. It's awful. It just reminded me of that same issue. I just thought it was like this weird, like, what a strange quirk. Like, why would anyone have to know this? But here we are.
Yeah, I think the reason that they do it is because creating the stack is kind of like an expensive operation.
Right.
So they retain the pointers until someone actually accesses it, and then they have to create it. Once they can create it, then they can throw all that other stuff away.
Right, yeah. It's a trade-off for sure. Like, I think probably 99.999% of the time people throw new error and done, and they don't have to worry about it. But it's like one of those things where now every time I ever see someone create an error and just like pass it somewhere, I'm like, no, you don't do that. Like, that's wrong. Just create it wherever you're at. Like, don't do that. That took me a while. I think that took me a few hours to figure out what in the world was going on with that. And the discovery was like one of those things when you discover it, you're like, did I just find a unicorn in the code? Like, what is this? This is the weirdest thing. Like, who knows this? Like, why does anyone have to know?
Colin's like, I knew that.
Yeah.
But to be fair, when he started telling the story, I was like, yeah, I recognize that problem. But if somebody was like, why are we seeing this error or this memory usage, it would probably still take me a while to come to the same, like, oh, it's the error stack. It's not one of those things that just jumps, you know, pops into your head immediately. But if you've seen it before and someone's talking about it, you're like, oh, yeah, that.
Oh, dude, if you had a recording of me, like, whenever I'm in console and I, like, logged the error stack and, like, I could visibly see the memory usage go down, I was like, what? What? Why did that happen? And I did it again, and I did it again. And I'm like, that actually, like, me examining it, that actually did cause this. Like, it just happened that I had the console right next to, like, the perf monitor thing going.
I feel like I'm watching a TikTok video. Did you see this happen? I'm on the internet too much, y'all. It's terrible.
Yeah. For me, it was like the first time I saw it, it was just like spooky behavior. I was like, this is until it was consistent. And then I'm like, all right, so clearly this is doing something. And then, then after that, I ran a couple of experiments locally to prove to myself that I wasn't insane. And
things like errors and closures are another big one, where they can like surprisingly hold on to things that you're not expecting. Yeah. And I've seen like V8 change over the years to where like you would create a function with the function keyword versus an arrow function, and it would actually hold on to different things and different amounts of memory. And I think that they were kind of like, you know, bugs that weren't really bugs, but could lead to memory issues. I think they've since been resolved, but yeah, just really weird implementation details that 99.9% of the time nobody cares about, but when you get bit, then you care.
Right. makes me wonder if it's related to async await, because like if you have like a promise chain, right, and you're like, my promise does this, and then, and you're accessing, you close over something in one of the thens. By the time you get past that then to the next then, it's already garbage collected that thing. Like, it's actually, the V8's smart enough to do that. But if you use async await, it holds on to anything that you've made in that function, like pretty much until you get all the way to the whole thing's resolved. And I ran into an issue one time where, you know, someone made some big gnarly async function that had like a for loop and some other stuff in it. And like, there was a memory leak in there, and it was caused by something that should have been garbage collected up above, but was not garbage collected. It was hanging out while the rest of this process kept going and going and going for a very long time. And by converting it to just a chain of promise, then it eliminated that problem. But yeah, it's does make me wonder if it's related to that, because it's such a weird, I thought that was a really weird behavior. Like, I was like, what? Why would it? This variable is no longer relevant.
What are you doing today, Ben? Maybe you're gonna slip into the code base and see what's going on.
Exactly.
Well, Colin, do you want to tell us about like anything else about like what you're working on or like anything exciting?
Sure. Yeah. So there's been some things going on in Node Core recently. So like I mentioned earlier, I had been working on a test runner that had initially shipped in Node 18. Just last night, the pull request was merged to mark that as stable for Node 20. So I guess it's March now. At the end of April, when Node 20 is released, the test runner will be stable there. We also stabilized util.parseArgs. So that is a built-in function that's fairly new to Node that does like command line option parsing for you. So similar to something like Commander or Yargs. It's actually one of the people who did the implementation was one of the maintainers of Yargs. So there's some overlap there. But that's going to be stable. I'm trying to think what else. We just landed single executable applications. So if you've ever used like PKG or there's some other ones out there, you can basically take your application code, bundle it up with the Node.js binary. And then you can, you know, people who don't have Node or NPM installed on their systems, you can just give them this binary and they can run it and still have the, you know, the Node experience without having to install all that.
That's really cool. I haven't been following the thing with the test runner. So like, is it just like a Jest sort of thing in like built into the Node library or?
Yeah. So, you know, the idea behind shipping a test runner with Core was, you know, everybody that's doing any type of like substantial project is probably going to have tests in their application. So, you know, everyone has to install a test runner. There's a lot of scary things on NPM these days, like, you know, malicious packages, package authors actually sabotaging their own packages and like, you know, taking people's deployments down. So like, you know, being able to have that in Core, and now that we have these other runtimes like Dino and Bun out there who are shipping more things in Core, it kind of, I don't want to say opened the floodgates, but it kind of broke down some barriers in Node itself for shipping more things in Core. And then, you know, there was discussion about should there be one in Core and whatnot. And I had been really wanting one in Core for a long time because I had various problems with some of the test runners that were out there. And then the real deal breaker for me came, it was kind of silly, but I had mentioned earlier I used Happy's test runner lab. And I have my own linter, kind of like a standard JS linter.
Of course. Well, who doesn't have their own linter, right?
Yeah, well, it's built on top of ESLint, so it's just ESLint config. I didn't go out there and like totally reinvent the wheel.
Dude's got his own linter. Okay, that's cool. Keep going. Sorry.
The best part about it is the name. It's belly button, like belly button lint.
I actually want to use that more than like, certainly more. As long as Airbnb doesn't get their hands on it, I'll be happy about it. So that we should do that.
We were laughing in the last episode about Airbnb's. Was it Airbnb's linter, Ben?
Yeah. I told Jay Phelps that him and I should write a linter that uses like ChatGPT technology to just arbitrarily take your code and just like roast it, like when it sees stuff, or just be like, this code sucks, so sorry, you can't merge. Like just random, like you know, because I could take the code and write something semi-intelligent but mildly insulting about it, and then just squiggly underline. So that was my idea. But yeah. I'm sorry, I mean, we interrupted you. You're telling us about Happy's thing and your linter. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so I was trying to upgrade my linter to the newest version of ESLint. It was like a new major. And the new major update to ESLint actually broke lab because it depended on ESLint. It also has its own linting built in using the Happy style guide, which most people would find very hard to read. So I'm not necessarily advocating for that. So it has ESLint built in and it broke lab's integration somehow. So like it was totally messing with my ability to upgrade my linter. And so that just triggered me to run or write an entire test runner from scratch. And yeah, that's how it started. And yesterday we got it to stable, and you know, as long as it doesn't get reverted or any huge issues, you know, with it come up, then when Node 20 comes out, it'll be there and be stable. I'm using it at work with Node 18 and in a pretty non-trivial code base. So a lot of things with like workers, HTTP servers, like a lot of like, you know, like I said, non-trivial stuff, and haven't really had any issues with it. So I'm hoping that other people will use it and enjoy it also.
That's awesome. I'll use it.
And it's so funny that you're talking about just like spiraling into, oops, I built this. Like, different example. Yes, like last week I was on holiday and I was like trying to write a kid's book that was bilingual for my child. And then I was like, well, all my friends need one too in these different languages that they also speak. And then I ended up writing like 20 books in 8 different languages. And I was like, you know, like 3/4 of the way through, I'm like, where am I? What am I doing? What am I doing with my life right now?
You're on holiday though, so that's interesting. You're like,
yeah, I was relaxing.
I take vacations myself, Tracy.
I'm jealous though, because I actually would love to write a children's book. I just don't have any good children's book ideas.
Let me tell you, it's pretty easy. You're teaching a child colors. It's not like rocket science. I mean, your stuff, you're like contributing to the internet. I'm just...
I would buy a book, like a children's book of JavaScript horror stories. I would totally read that to my kids.
They have like those JavaScript books and I'm like, or like they have those little like, okay, teach a 2 or 3 year old like how to code. And
yeah,
it's like, okay, I'm going to stand up. And after I stand up, I'm going to move across the coffee table. And then after I move across the coffee table, I'm going to bend down. And then I'm going to pick up the ball. And that's like how they teach kids how to code. Like,
I've seen some other ones like A is for array. I can't remember if that's the name of the book or just a page in the book. But like all the letters like with different tech things attached to them.
That's pretty cute too. Yeah, there's so many. Okay, so we have to end with a funny thing, which by the way, I know I'm like stuck on you working at Dino because that's like how we've been talking for the past like year. I mean, you're not working at Dino now, but I forgot that you worked at Joyent and Samsung.
And it's like, fun, near yeah.
Oh yeah, dude, you're like
Walmart.
Like 10 years, like that's a lot. Yeah, so Colin's basically worked
at Walmart too. Were you at Walmart when Ken Wheeler was there?
So I remember him being a contractor through Formidable Labs. I was more on like the back end side, and I think he was friends. So like our paths didn't overlap at all. But I definitely remember the name. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like he probably was just like pissing off all the back end people. You're like, who the F is this mother effer?
No, like honestly, so the truth about Ken is like he's kind of rough around the edges on Twitter, but like at work, in the workplace, everybody loves that guy. Like everyone loves Ken Wheeler. Well, at least when they did when I was at Citadel, everyone just thought he was the
I love him cat, on the internet.
Cat's pajamas.
I love him on the, I love him all the time. Okay. We're going to end off with a would you rather question. So I feel like we have to do 2 of them though. I'm going to read you the first one. So we use ChatGPT to generate these. And I said, can you write a would you rather about Dino and Node.js? And they were like, and it was like, okay, this one we're not going to do because it's lame. Would you rather use Dino or Node.js for your next server-side JavaScript project and why? Would you rather use Dino or Node for your next server-side JavaScript project?
Excuse me. Sorry.
We don't have to do that one. I mean, you can answer it, Colin, I guess. Or can you not?
I would say either option is fine, and you will succeed with either runtime.
Okay. Well, these are better. So I was like, okay, how about a funnier one? And then this one was kind of lame too, but we'll go. The third one is not lame, just letting you know. Actually, it is kind of lame too. I know the answer to this one. Would you rather debug someone else's spaghetti code or eat a plate of actual spaghetti that's been sitting out in the sun for a week?
Should I go first?
Yes.
I would absolutely rather debug someone's code than risk food poisoning.
Like, duh, right? Ben, your answer?
Wait, this is the plate of spaghetti one?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, come on.
I mean, I do like spaghetti. So
you'd rather debug someone else's spaghetti code because that's like fun.
You're right. You're right. You got me.
All right. So this was a bad one. So ChatGPT is like 0 for 2. But this one's good enough. Okay. Would you rather have a programming language named after you or have a sandwich named after you?
Oh, no.
Go ahead, Colin.
I mean, is it a good programming language? Is it a good sandwich?
That's the risk you're going to have to take.
There are no good programming languages, Colin.
I'm going to go with the sandwich thing because I feel like many more people will know about the sandwich than the programming language.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not going to be the chicken salad sandwich. It's going to be the Colin salad sandwich.
Yeah. No one's ever going to, I mean, there's going to be people that like don't like the taste of you, but no one's going to hate you like they will the programming language, right? Like
depends on the sandwich. Like, could somebody hate a BLT? What if it's a Colin LT? I don't even know.
Oh, that's disturbing.
Okay, what about you, Ben?
I think eating Colin would be cannibalism, so I don't really want to do that. That's not the question. I think I want to be. I'd be a pro. And I know they exist. I wish I could think of one, but like naming a programming language after yourself just seems so vain that like I can't fathom it. On that alone, I would just be like, I'd rather be a sandwich. Like, use Ben language. Ben Lang is the best.
Ben Lang doesn't sound too bad. Colin would be like a calling. Calling.
I found my calling.
I think I'd rather have a sandwich. Although if I was a programming language, then people would be swearing about me a lot, you know. So that'd be interesting too.
Yeah, but people developers are mean. Like, do you ever see what they say about other programming languages?
Yes. Well, cool, Colin. Thanks for coming and being prepared with some fun, like, examples. I feel like you've been the most prepared, don't you think, Ben? Like,
yeah. I mean, this is really good. This is really good. Tracy, I will say I'm a little disappointed. Like, I looked up a would you rather to ask you because you didn't do a would you rather. You never do them. You're always like, you always ask everybody else.
So we're going to have 4 would you rathers on this.
Right. All right.
Sorry,
you ready?
Yeah.
Colin, should I ask her one?
Yes.
All right. Okay. All right. Tracy, would you rather write JavaScript code blindfolded and hope it works or have a duck as your coding partner that quacks every time you make a mistake?
Definitely the first one.
Quack.
I already have a coding partner that will quack every time I make a mistake. So
quack.
I don't need that one. What about you, Colin? What would you rather do?
I think I would take the duck.
Yeah?
It'd be hilarious. Every time you made a mistake, it'd be like, quack.
Yeah, I was picturing that there's like a well-known Twitter account, like why you should have a duck or something like that, that always posts these cool pictures. So I'm just picturing myself on that Twitter account.
So much fun. Well, it was good chatting, y'all. Thank you so much. Make sure to follow Colin on Twitter. He's one of the nice guys. And if you want to follow Ben or myself, cool too. But Colin's cooler. So
quack.
I said Colin's cooler and you quacked. You can't do that.
Sorry. I thought you were telling people to follow me on Twitter. Quack.
Okay, y'all. We'll see you next time.
All right. We'll see you.
Bye, everyone.